With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Kära lyssnare, det här avsnittet skulle ha börjat med ett försnack med Mia och Lina, men på grund av sjukdom så har de inte haft möjlighet att spela in det, så jag tänker att jag sköter det. Jag tänker nu spela upp en liten pjäs för er, ja, där ni helt enkelt kommer att få höra vad Mia och Lina skulle ha sagt. Då kör vi. Lina inledde entusiastiskt. Idag tänkte vi bjussa på en intervju med ingen mindre än Graham Jones. Han är alltså klinisk fysiolog och vd på Nordic Clinic i Stockholm, där de jobbar med funktionsmedicin. Graham är dessutom gästskribent på foodpharmacy.se. Ja, vi har ju fått så vansinnigt många frågor från människor om oxalater. Sebbe, en faktaruta för de som inte hängt med här.
Faktaruta.
Oxalater är salter av oxalsyra. Oxalsyra finns i växtriket och därmed i flera olika vegetabiliska livsmedel. Bland de som innehåller mest finns rabarber, spenat och kakao. På livsmedelsverket.se kan man läsa att stora mängder oxalsyra kan vara negativt för kroppen genom att den kan påverka och minska upptaget av viktiga mineraler som kalcium och järn, samt i värsta fall ge njurskador vid riktigt stora intag. De skriver också att för friska personer som äter varierat har det ingen betydelse för hälsan om man då och då äter livsmedel med höga halter av oxalsyra. Då sa Mia, ja, det har kommit in en massa frågor om oxalater. Frågor som, jag äter stora mängder grönsaker och trodde att jag var nyttig, men nu börjar jag bli orolig för att det är farligt. Eller? Jag har hört att det kanske inte är så nyttigt att dricka en grön smoothie varje dag då det medför stora mängder oxalater. Lina tog över. Vi ställde helt enkelt alla frågor till Graham. Kontentan är att för en liten specifik grupp människor kan det vara bra att under en period utesluta livsmedel med oxalater. Men för den stora massan är dock oxalater inget större problem. Då sa Mia kort, så bra! Lina fortsatte. Och för er som har frågat om att dricka den där gröna smoothien varje dag, så är inte det samma sak som att säga att man ska få i sig stora mängder av till exempel spenat varje dag. Glöm inte det viktigaste, att vi inte ska överäta något utan istället äta varierat, det vill säga lite av många olika livsmedel. Byt ut och variera dina ingredienser, och för att återgå till grön smoothie så behöver ju inte en grön smoothie ens innehålla spenat. Mia svarade lika glatt som vanligt. Precis! Vi ska ju få i oss 30 olika livsmedel per vecka. Det kanske inte låter så mycket, men idag kommer över 60% av den energi vi äter från endast 4 grödor. Majs, ris, vete och potatis. Nej, ska vi inte ta och lyssna på den här intervjun nu? Då kom Sebastian in i rummet och sa, jo, det ska vi absolut göra. Jag har bara en liten sak att säga först. Ja, det blir lite reklam helt enkelt. Lina och Mia startade Food Pharmacy 2014 för att sprida kunskap om den starka kopplingen mellan kost och hälsa. De var själva inga experter på området, men har genom åren lärt sig massor av alla experter de mött. Om det är något de har fått inpräntat i skallen om och om igen genom åren, så är det vikten av en välfungerande maghälsa och en rik tarmflora. Detta är anledningen till att Food Pharmacy nu har lanserat kosttillskotten Gut Flora, bestående av mjölksyrebakterier, och Gut Flora Fibers, som är en fiberblandning för magen. Gå nu för 17 in på nutrienthunter.se och bekanta dig med dessa nykomlingar. Lina och Mia hälsar att kosttillskott inte ska användas som en ersättning till en hälsosam livsstil. Ät det som ett komplement till en varierad hälsosam kost. De har också bett mig meddela er trogna poddlyssnare att de bjuder på en rabatt. Och den lyder podd 10, alltså PODD10, vilket helt enkelt ger er 10% rabatt på Gut Flora och Gut Flora Fibers om ni går in på nutrienthunter.se. Härligt! Nu är det äntligen dags för intervju med Graham Jones här i Food Pharmacy-podden.
Of course, yeah, it's a big hot topic at the moment with oxalates or oxalic acid, as it's also called, like very high, found in high levels in plants. And they use it as a defense mechanism because calcium must be restricted in some way, because higher concentrations can interfere with a variety of crucial cell processes. So oxalic acid in that way helps with the calcium regulation. But certainly for humans, oxalates do not, I don't think it poses that, that big of a risk, but it can under certain circumstances. So of course, we as humans, we eat plant foods and then we absorb oxalates from our diet via the digestive tract. And we also produce oxalates in the body, and many people forget about that side of things. They're just focusing on the dietary aspect. But overall, I don't feel oxalates are not bad per se for the vast majority of people, but they can act negatively in certain individuals under certain conditions. And I think that's where a low oxalate diet might be helpful, at least in the short term.
So why are some practitioners recommending a low oxalate diet? And do you think all people should be doing a low oxalate diet?
Great question. Why are practitioners recommending it? We understand that oxalates in plants interfere with crucial cell processes, and the theory is this happens exactly the same in human cells. But I don't think that's the case, and I think the evidence shows that's definitely not the case. If we look at epidemiology, if oxalates were a human toxin, we'd expect to see mortality increase in populations that consume them in higher amounts. And of course, guess who consumes a lot of oxalates in general? It's centenarians. So these are groups of people which live to, on average, 100 years old and further. And they a lot of things like nuts and other foods which contain these high levels of oxalates, but nut intake seems to actually decrease mortality. And if we thought oxalates were a major problem or they were a toxin, then of course we'd expect to see the opposite effect. So that's my take, that people overall shouldn't be doing a low oxalate diet, at least in the longer term. And I'm sure we'll get into this in a bit more detail as we go through, but there are some situations where it may be helpful in the short term, but you've got to look at the root cause as to why oxalates may be causing a problem.
Okay, so let's have a look at the people who actually could benefit from a low oxalate diet. Who would you say could benefit from that?
People who have a genetic condition, it's called primary hyperoxaluria, and it's a defect in glyoxylate metabolism that increases oxalate production in the body. So as a result of that, these people will have an elevated amount of oxalate in their urine, and they're more likely to form kidney stones and can have problems elsewhere when calcium oxalate stones form. So that's a definite first group of people that would benefit from a low oxalate diet and helping to manage that situation.
And do we know how big this group is? I mean, is it a common genetic problem?
No, it's not very common. It's very low, and it's quite rare in the population. Can't remember the exact figure off the top of my head, but overall, I don't think I've ever come across that in clinical practice over the last 15 or so years that I've been working in, you know, various hospital and medical and health clinic departments. So it's more where we see, you know, this, not this primary cause of elevated oxalate production, but this kind of secondary cause where you're getting excess absorption from the digestive system. And there we think that this secondary or excess absorption via the gut is because of things like hyperintestinal permeability, or leaky gut, as it's called, which I really don't like that word, because the gut is supposed to be leaky. It's just not meant to be hyper leaky. So hyperintestinal permeability, inflammation, a high fat diet, and low calcium intake actually can drive up excess absorption from the gut. So that's where, in my clinical work, I guess I'm primarily focusing, is looking at possible root causes there. You know, why would there be inflammation? Blood sugar handling and diabetes also seems to be a big problematic area that increases oxalate absorption. And like I said, high fat diet and low calcium intake.
Do we know why people with diabetes have this problem?
Well, it seems to be that usually, first of all, people who have diabetes or are pre-diabetic, they of course tend to have higher weight. They're more likely to be obese or be heading that way. And patients or people are obese, they actually have more inflammation in general, and that seems to contribute to actually this risk of lipopolysaccharide or increased lipopolysaccharides in the gut, and these are these kind of inflammatory substances that come from the walls of certain bacteria. So the diabetes seems to drive up inflammation in general and excess lipopolysaccharides, and that then affects this transporter. So it's probably a combination of factors there, and it's difficult to say it's this one thing, but it seems like diabetes drives an inflammatory state, and it's the inflammation that causes and the combination with lipopolysaccharides that causes the oxalate problem. So it's not the oxalate problem that causes the inflammation. So it's important to get that the right way around. So just repeat it, that it really seems that it's the inflammation that causes the oxalate problem. It's not that the oxalates are causing the inflammation.
So a common question from our followers is that, should I stop having my green spinach smoothie? Could that be a problem?
Yes, another great question. I think the answer to that is no, not necessarily. First thing is that if you want to improve oxalate, if you like, removal, then actually we need some oxalate in the diet because it helps to promote growth of a bacteria that helps that process, and that's called Oxalobacter. So if you have a very low oxalate diet, then this Oxalobacter former genus will be reduced in the gut. It possibly can be eliminated. And that Oxalobacter that sits on these areas of the digestive tract, and it actually helps to regulate this transporter or pump that pumps out the oxalate. So if you're reducing oxalate consumption, you may actually, well, one, set yourself up for bigger oxalate problems in the future. And also, again, it's not addressing the root cause. So you've got to look at that root. Is your root cause, are you pre-diabetic or not handling blood sugar very well? Is there a major dysbiosis, so an imbalance in the bacteria or inflammatory state in your digestive system? And those things will have to be dealt with in the longer term than cutting out oxalate. So I never would necessarily recommend someone to have, for example, the same food every day. So should you have a green, you know, loaded spinach smoothie every day, 365 days a year? I mean, I don't generally recommend things like that, because I believe that seasonal eating and changing the foods that we intake, that helps to promote diversity in the digestive system of the bacteria and nutrient status. And I think we need periods of fasting and certain nutrient situations to promote longevity. So I think, of course...
I mean, variety is one of the keys to... variety in food is one of the keys to a healthy way of eating. So
variety is the spice of life. Exactly. So I think it shouldn't stop having the spinach smoothies, for example, or green smoothies. But again, that kind of thinking in general is not something that I'm aligned with. I think that, yeah, absolutely, have a green smoothie. You just don't necessarily need to have it every day. And probably the more of an inflammatory situation the digestive system is, the Oxalobacter situation in the gut, then of course that may be a problem for some. But again, I'm going to keep coming back to this, that you've got to get to the root cause of the potential problem. And so you've got to get to these and look at these possible root causes as to why might there be inflammation in the digestive tract or excess lipopolysaccharide production. Is that being driven by a very high fat diet? Is that you're eating consistently for 12 hours a day and so having a too long feeding window? You know, how is the sleep status? How's the exercise status? Because the gut environment is completely modulated by what you're doing every day and things like stress as well. So it's no point, in my opinion, just focusing on one thing like, okay, let's remove oxalate. Got to think wider, got to look at root causes and got to address those factors rather than taking away oxalates, which then maybe puts you in a worse situation. And that I often see that at the clinic where people have gone a long elimination diets and got to the point where they can't reintroduce anything at all. They've really change their bacterial communities and processing of different foods, and they actually end up in a worse situation than where they started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So talking about the root cause, I've heard you said that a low oxalate diet is comparable to how you should use FODMAP.
Faktaruta.
FODMAP står för fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides and polyols och är en sammanställning av en grupp kolhydrater som inte absorberas så lätt av vår tarm och därför kan orsaka jäsning och gaser när de når tjocktarmen. Listan över FODMAPs kan användas av personer som är drabbade av IBS-problematik på så sätt att man tar bort dessa kolhydrater för att sedan lägga till en och en och därmed på ett systematiskt sätt kunna utröna vilka som ställer till problem.
Yeah. Again, I think about them in the same category. These are tools that you can use in the short term to potentially lift some symptoms or reduce the effect of symptoms. So same deal with IBS and low FODMAP diet, that we might use that clinically for a very short period of time to help a person that has IBS symptoms just to give them some relief. But long term, a low FODMAP diet can negatively affect the large intestinal bacteria. And of course, we want to understand is why can't the gut tolerate FODMAPs? What's going on there? Why is there fermentation of those carbohydrates? Mm. And address that at the root, again, rather than just putting patients on a consistent low FODMAP diet, which can have negative consequences in the longer term from a nutritional and a gut bacterial perspective. And I'm viewing the same with a low oxalate diet. It may help, and undoubtedly some patients do feel a lot better for doing that in the short term. But if we're going to use a low oxalate diet, it's as short as possible whilst we're allowing time for an inflammatory situation in the digestive tract or a diabetic situation or poor sugar handling situation, while that can be resolved. And then we want to introduce those back and actually get that person or that client or patient, whatever you call them, onto a more balanced approach with how they're eating.
Mm. This actually reminds me of when I met with Professor Thomas, who was, he is the oncologist of the year in UK.
Right.
Ja, Lina pratar om professor Robert Thomas, som ni kan lyssna på i avsnitt 133.
And it was very interesting because he told me that many cancer patients are told during their treatment not to have fiber-rich food,
right? Yeah,
because it's hard for the digestive system to handle it during the treatment. But he said this is so important to understand that. I mean, if you exclude fiber, for example, it's one of the worst thing you could do on a long-term perspective for your health. So, this is actually the same principle we're talking about, which is important to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, there's pros and cons to every situation, and we're trying to weigh that up at all times. And of course, I think that practitioners or people that push a low oxalate diet, I don't think they're necessarily coming, you know, of course, they're not coming from a place of we want to cause you a long-term problem. And it's difficult to know. Of course, we always need more research, but just looking at the research now, and groups that eat high oxalate diets seem to be very healthy overall. And it seems to be, I think, this, rather than it being a primary issue, which would mean a low oxalate diet is needed. So we've got this, rather than this genetic condition, we have these other situations which make sense in a Western lifestyle. We have, you know, people who are overweight or obese. They have low level chronic inflammation. They have problems with their digestive system and activated immune cells, increased lipopolysaccharides, you know, this hyper leaky gut. And that basically, you know, that chain of events locks oxalate into tissues, and it helps to form calcium oxalate stones. So I think, again, it's just, a low oxalate diet is one tool that may help to relieve some pressure in the short term, but it's not a long-term strategy. And if you can work through those issues without doing a low oxalate diet, then potentially even better, because then you're not losing, you know, that family of bacteria, Oxalobacter, from the digestive environment that then, you know, will affect things further, because then that, you know, they help to turn that transporter on that removes oxalates out.
So then it's quite clear that in the long term, the cons for eliminating oxalates are more than the pros. But how could one of our listeners know if they have a problem with oxalates?
There's a couple of different ways. You could do trial and error. That's quite basic, but good. You could eliminate oxalates, and if things improve, then you can say, well, okay, obviously I may have a problem here with oxalates. Now, it might be that there's another reason why you've improved, but if we take that on face value, that could be one way. If you have borderline high blood sugar, so if you're pre-diabetic or you are type 2 diabetic and have poor blood sugar handling, then definitely a group that in the short term is going to have problems with oxalates until, of course, the diabetes can be brought under better control. Then if you have hyper leaky, so hyperpermeable gut, and you have an inflammatory situation in the gut, like inflammatory bowel disease, then also there may be some, some benefits to a low oxalate diet, because that can cause, those conditions can cause problems with oxalates. And then we can assess patients, so we can use a urine test and look at the level of oxalate excretion, and we can do a stool test to look at the levels of this family of bacteria, this Oxalobacter, that helps to remove oxalates. So we can also look at it from that way, directly through measurement via the laboratory testing.
So why might it be bad to remove oxalate foods long term?
High oxalate foods are basically foods that promote longevity. They contain things like nitric oxide precursors, which can help to maintain a healthy blood pressure level. They also have things like betaine and methyl donors. So these are important for a process called methylation, which helps to, if you like, regulate our DNA and, you know, repair it. And then foods that contain oxalates, they also have a lot of nutrients that reduce inflammation and also help with or contain a substance that helps this thing called NAD plus, which is an important molecule for our mitochondria that create our energy and are involved with our immune response and linked with longevity as well. So if you're doing a long-term low oxalate diet, there's possible implications that you are going to be missing these nutrients that may contribute to an earlier development of cardiovascular disease, maybe less able to repair DNA, and you're going to get more DNA damage. Of course, this is not good from a cancer risk perspective. And then we have these other areas which talked a lot about in various blogs for food pharmacy, like decreased stem cell pools and therefore reduced regenerative potential and poorer cell maintenance. So overall, it can affect things like cellular energy, impaired autophagy. There might be increased cellular senescence. So these are zombie-like cells that are in this state that, again, encourages inflammation. So it may be that, again, just doing a long-term oxalate damage may overall increase or cause cellular damage and inflammation. I'm talking there that there's an accelerated aging process going on. Now, I can't say that, okay, this is definitely the case and it's going to contribute to all those things, because, of course, there's many more variables involved. But we do think that, of course, a change in diet that affects nutrient levels can affect the rate at which we biologically age, and it's possible that a low oxalate diet may contribute to a faster rate of aging over the long term.
Oh, and longevity is something we all want, don't we?
Exactly. Yeah, we do.
That's something we share, even though how we live and how we live our life, yeah. We all, I think, want longevity.
Well, I think it's just really, you know, I can't think of anything worse than, you know, losing my mind over the last, you know, 20 years. So getting dementia and, you know, just not being able to enjoy those last sort of 20 or 30 years. And I think that's what the centenarians, they have. They have this like superpower to be able to go, you know, an extra 20 years or so without chronic disease. But actually when centenarians do get chronic disease, it affects them as quickly and as rapidly as it does, you know, us who are not blessed enough to be in that, you know, genetic crowd. So, So of course, yeah, I mean, certainly for myself and for a lot of patients at Nordic Clinic, I mean, the goal is successful aging and longevity to be able to do the things they want to do, you know, late into their 80s or 90s and, hopefully reach the centenarian mark. So that's my goal. I think it would, yeah.
So thank you so much, Graham. I hope that all our listeners became a little bit wiser when it comes to if they should eliminate their oxalate food or not. I will certainly not do it, and I'm looking forward to hear your feedback on this. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Du har lyssnat på Food Pharmacy-podden med Lina Närtby och Mia Klase, och idag även med Graham Jones. Ja, jag heter Sebastian Ring och står för försnack tydligen, och musik och lite redigering och sånt. Vill du ha mer av Food Pharmacy så är det ju väldigt lätt att hitta oss på foodpharmacy.se och på Instagram under namnet food_pharmacy. Tack för att just du har lyssnat. Hej!